This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, good morning. It's now 8:45 a.m, Monday the 29th of August. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Ibrahim Sani here, as well as Julian Ng, to look at some of the biggest business news of the day. Now, according to the National Property Information Centre, NAPIC, 23% of properties launched in the first quarter of 2016 have yet to be sold. So essentially, a quarter of all the new property launches we saw this year are still vacant.
Yes, and this signals a slowdown in the property market because, if you think about it, Melissa, the number of unsold units both in the residential and commercial properties have climbed 16% in the first quarter for this year. On top of all this, Johor, interestingly enough, was singled out as having the most number of units launched but not sold, as opposed to other states in the country.
So the Singaporeans are not buying as much property as we thought they were. And we're talking about 10 billion ringgit of unsold, almost 10 billion ringgit of unsold property. That's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So the question is, right, do we need to have a freeze or a closure on new properties being built? Because there is a related news here saying that mall owners have asked authorities in Selangor and KL to impose a two-year freeze on new applications to build shopping malls.
That's
and
ridiculous.
That's malls, right?
I mean, That's ridiculous. These are the players, the purveyors of the nuclear arms themselves asking for a ceasefire, right?
Yeah.
To this nuclear arm race. Because if you don't do it, then all the other players jump on the bandwagon, the existing players will get affected.
You know, for me, I wonder whether, you know, this is worse than it actually seems to be, because already we hear of property developers delaying their launches, right? So they, you know, we talked to some property developers on the Breakfast Grill, and not a lot of property developers were brave enough to launch this year because they saw the market and they said, okay, we're going to hedge our bets here. So the ones that did launch are saying that a quarter of their property has not been sold. But that's just for, I guess, the residential side, the residential commercial side. But when we talk about the retail space, I don't know whether it's fair, like you said, Jules, that the mall operators can ask for this. Because, you know, isn't that your job as a property developer to do the due diligence in the market survey first to not kind of build so many malls in one area? We see LDP alone. How many malls are on LDP
Absolutely,
alone?
Yeah. Yeah.
Lining the entire LDP. But I think that there is a case that the developers are actually clamoring for a lot of the reversal of rules that Bank Negara brought in. For example, the elimination of DIBS financing, the developer's interest-bearing scheme. And Bank Negara also made a ruling, or the government at least made a ruling that foreigners can't buy property below $1 million. So a lot of the property here can actually be cleared by foreigners who are hunting for yielding assets at this point in time. But that would have a bearing on home affordability.
Yeah.
Because if you let the money come in, the flood of money coming in, that would make properties in Malaysia more and more expensive.
I was just going to say that could open the floodgates, and that could, you know, have all the unintended consequences of that could be something we may need to address. But what do you think about this whole calling for a freeze on, you know, government intervention on a freeze on property licenses? Because it's not the first time this has happened. Remember back in 2014, I believe it was DBKL who issued a moratorium on approvals for new hotel licenses. So they've done it before. But whenever they see there's a glut in the market, they say, okay, we're going to put a freeze on this. So I guess because the precedence has been set, then perhaps, you know, now marketplace is saying, well, you help me out lah, you know, my mall is empty, so stop building new malls.
Yeah, I agree with you, Melissa, on the outset that the government is really not in a position to make this kind of commercially driven decisions, and that the players have got to leave it to themselves to see whether the market can absorb any more business, any more floor space coming on, because I think the government just has too many things to think about.
It's worth noting, right, while everything else is happening around the country, UDA in Tanjung Tokong is doubling down on their bets, because right now we know that in Pulau Jeraja, UDA has a GDV value of about 1.8 billion property project there, and apparently in an exclusive with the New Straits Times, UDA has resolved the land issue with the residents of the Tanjung Tokong beach. Apparently they are removing or reallocating 24,000 of these villages to low-cost housing areas and apartments in ENO. So I guess you know, to juxtapose this and to use that word from Julian, this is quite interesting because while everything else is cooling down, UDA is doubling up.
Yeah, I guess with market competition, you need to go through that kind of innovative baptism of fire, right? Who knows what other property or mall developers can come up with next instead of the traditional formats and the traditional model. Someone may be able to think of something else which would not be possible if there was a blanket freeze on mall development.
Well, speaking about this juxtaposition, this kind of two-speed economy as we're seeing it, the property sector may be slowing down, but the fast food sector seems to be picking up speed. Malaysia's largest fast food operator, QSR Brands, plans to relist on the local stock market next year through an IPO of worth over 400 million ringgit. So QSR, of course, they manage the KFC brand, the Pizza Hut franchise as well. And a couple of years ago, 2013, they were taken private by CVC Capital Partners, which is a private equity firm, and EPF in partnership with Johor Corp.
Now, this is the sole franchisee of KFC, not just in Malaysia, but also in Singapore, Brunei and Cambodia. And for them to actually think about going for IPO, it comes to show two things. Number one, this market is very, very robust and they want to capitalize on the consumer market, particularly in the fast food franchise. And number two, they don't see market as being soft. They are really thinking that the market is ready to absorb this kind of investments.
Yeah, 400 million US dollars. That would make it one of the biggest IPOs in Malaysia this year. And I think that they are, in fact, a proxy for that particular market. We saw Nestle's result being very good, jumping double digit. And we talked about the idea of going cheap in economic downturns, right? So this could be something that is happening with KFC or Pizza Hut.
So last time I might go to, you know, whatever hipster cafe or go for a bit more fine dining. Maybe now I'm you know, increasing my fast food intake, right? So is fast food essentially recession proof, or you know, it picks up whenever there's a recession?
What one thing maybe right? that is the possibility, because if you think about it, right, one of the shareholders of this company is Johor Corp, and Johor Corp used to be a big investor in property, but right now they're looking into other areas to invest in. So healthcare was one of them, and now this fast food chain.
Can I put forth a kind of controversial statement? I don't know whether it's all fast food that's doing well, because some fast food can be quite expensive, more expensive than it was before, and maybe portions are smaller, etc. Maybe it's just the Malaysian love for chicken.
It could be.
You know what I mean?
We love
our fried chicken.
Our fried stuff.
Yeah, fried stuff. Yeah. Combine the two loves
maybe
together.
If it's getting more expensive, you can share, but you also
you
make it less unhealthy, right?
You take one wing, I take one drumstick.
I'll take the drumstick, not the wing.
All right, let's move on to other news. Post Malaysia's net profit for the first quarter grew 40%. This is another business doing very well in times that could be described as very challenging.
This is incredibly strong, 40%, but I guess it's down to e-commerce, right? It's picking up the slack from e-commerce. And who would have thought that an old traditional business like postal services can grow 40% in this environment? And it's a testament to how a company can change and restructure itself to take care of the pulse of the economy, the new economy.
So I spoke to Dato Shukri Saleh on The Breakfast Grill recently. He's the CEO of Post. And, you know, we talked a bit about the transformation that Post is going through. And, you know, lots of companies that have that kind of legacy are looking to transform themselves. But I have to give credit to Dato Shukri, because he seems to be on the right path. He recognized halfway that the transformation wasn't going quite as planned. So they pivoted to the e-commerce direction, and now they want to do this whole logistics solution by buying Class KL Airport Services, that has consortium logistics under it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And that's a very smart move on his part, and it's bearing results now.
So the results are clear, right? When they transform and push forward for this e-commerce and logistics enterprises businesses, it comes and bear fruits, particularly when this company is a sleepy industry, the way Julian puts it. So the question now is, property sector, that's considered a sleepy industry if you think about it. Banking sector, insurance sector, these are all sleepy industries, and we saw their numbers declining year on year, quarter on quarter even. And right now, so for instance, banks, right, they want to go into fintech, they want to go all techie and stuff. I don't know whether that's enough for them to pull themselves out of the doldrums and get these kind of numbers the way Post Malaysia does.
I think when you do e-commerce, at the end of the day, you still need people to get into trucks, get behind the wheel and drive the trucks so that they can deliver the goods to you and me. Same thing with going into the cloud. When you go into cloud, you still need all the storage devices and hardware. So essentially, you are skipping one step. You're skipping bread and mortar, street-facing retail stores and going into the background. The retail outlet has shifted to the cloud, but the traditional logistics are still required.
Yeah. The question is, right, because we see these numbers going up by Post Malaysia and e-commerce, you can't buy and transact this kind of transactions without using money. And I think perhaps banks have to take a look into doubling down on their focus on fee-based transactions, because at the end of the day, loan growth is going to be slow. And while they have a lot of deposits in hand, we saw, for instance, RHB saw the deposit increase by 23%. That's cost to them, right? That's cost to the bank to hold these kind of deposits. Perhaps this is the best way to go with fee-based income.
8:56 right now, MInvest has been named Malaysia's best ETF provider at the Asset AAA Private Banking Wealth Management Investment and ETF Awards. So essentially, they're saying they're commending MInvest for having almost doubled the assets under management of the ABF Malaysia Bond Index Fund.
I mean, the glory of ETFs have been we've sung the praises of it many times on this show. Basically, it allows you to have a very quick exposure and diversification into the market by spending very little money, and the ETFs provide that. And we have a handful of ETFs, I think 6 or 7 ETFs listed within Malaysia. And if you wanted to be exposed to what the Bursa Malaysia Index is doing, then it's very easy to just go in and buy the FTSE Bursa Malaysia ETF. Also, the hunt for yields globally have, I suppose, resulted in a lot of money going into the ABF bond fund, which currently is giving a pretty decent yield. And that's why you see the AUMs doubling. But I think, what I am not very happy about is that these ETFs are not part of EPF's list of approved funds to buy. Oh. I mean, if EPF can approve people buying into unit trust, then there is no reason why ETFs shouldn't be on approved list, because they are essentially unit trust, but cheaper, lot cheaper.
Is it because the market for ETFs is so small? Because, you know, you mentioned there's only a handful of ETFs in Malaysia, right?
How it works is that if it becomes bigger, you just issue more ETFs. You just issue enough ETFs to fill the demand. I think the challenge with allowing EPF members to buy into ETFs is the back end. ETFs are not distributed through agents. You have to buy like a normal stock. So I think EPF would have to figure out how to allow people to buy into that.
Now, speaking of which, right, when we see that the fund management arm of MBank is being named as best ETF, and they're forward thinking about this, on the banking side, they're also thinking about rejigging their focus. In a recent interview by the Star, that was that by Dato' Sulaiman Tahir, the CEO of AMMB Holdings or MBank, he says that he wants to focus on the SME segment. So again, with this sector going through all these troubles of growing their loan, particularly at the retail side, on the corporate side, corporates wants to raise bonds or you know, it's very difficult for them to do so. Perhaps SME segment would be the core segment to look at.
Well, they're on a bit of a media drive, because I saw them in the Edge Weekly as well, as a huge interview with the CEO as well. Okay, we've got the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia coming up during the 9 o'clock news bulletin. After that, we'll take a look at some of the counters, the active counters of the day, if there's news flow driving that movement. So stay tuned right here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.